go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV Review Podcast, where we break down the latest and potentially the not-so-greatest from today's sci-fi television. I'm one of your hosts, Steve.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris. I guess you're not a Jedi Master anymore.
I forgot about that.
We're recording in the morning. This is a first for us, so we're not, I guess we're not fully awake. Or at least it's morning where I'm at.
Yeah, morning where he's at. Usually we record late, you know, after dinner time, but no, this is like a pre-lunch recording.
Yeah. Not only pre-lunch, but pre-Super Bowl recording. We're actually recording this a couple of hours before the Super Bowl, so.
Yeah, talk about a super last-minute recording. Usually we record a little ahead of time, but it was not the case in this situation.
No, it's been a crazy past couple of days, so.
Yeah, speaking of the Super Bowl, you have any, who do you want to win? We'll just go there.
Oof. Well, who do I want? I want the Chiefs, but I think the Bucks are going to win. You know, I mean, Tom Brady,
I think
man.
The Chiefs are going to win, and I want the Chiefs to win.
I don't know. It's weird because there has kind of been a similar start with Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady's careers to where – or not Tom Brady's. I should say Russell Wilson's because Patty Mahomes and Russell Wilson, their first time getting to the Super Bowl, they both ended up winning. But both of them, their second time getting to the Super Bowl back-to-back years, ended up losing to Tom Brady. So you never know.
We'll see. I envy our listeners because they will know the result of the Super Bowl and we won't.
That is true.
At least when you're listening to this, you'll know the result. We will while y'all are listening to it.
That's assuming that never they care mind. Enough to watch the Super Bowl. I mean, this is a sci-fi podcast. Maybe.
True. It is a sci-fi podcast. Not everyone loves sports. So.
No. We're weird ones.
You
we
might
like
be
both.
At a... Yeah.
Yeah, we like both sci-fi and sports.
But you might be at a Super Bowl party thinking, oh, man, I wish I was watching Star Trek or Star Wars. And, you know, I could be right there with you. Depending on how the game's going, I'd be like, I'd much rather watch Trek or something else.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it really does depend. But every time that Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady's played, it's always been a shootout. So let's hope. Yeah. Knock on wood. Let's hopefully we get a good game out of this one.
Yeah, but for all our non-sports fans, why don't we just go ahead and jump into the episode? That way you don't have to hear any more about football.
You can do it! You can do it all night long!
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it!
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it!
I'm gonna go do it!
Alright, so what do we got in store for this episode, brother?
So for today's episode, this is part 7 of our discussion. Is that right? We have had 7 discussions. Are going to have 7. So this is part 7 of our Star Trek Discovery discussion. We are into season 2, episodes 4, 5, and 6. 4 entitled The Oval for Charon. I don't know why I said it like that. It might be Charon, but Charon. It feels like a Charon.
Is Obal right too? An Obal for Charon? I don't know. It's just a weird name to begin with.
Yeah. Apparently, we're not very familiar with foreign languages. If that is a foreign, I don't even know. We're not really
Obal for Charon.
Verse on our reading and pronunciation abilities.
I mean, we're not bad. It's just.
I mean, they've thrown some weird names, some Latin names.
Yeah, Latin's to be a little expected, but I don't even know what Charon is supposed to be. I mean, we're getting a little bit nitty gritty on, you know, non-relevant details, but still.
Yeah. This episode is centric around a sphere that pulls Discovery out of warp, like one of those Star Wars ships that pulls ships out of hyperspace.
Mm-hmm.
So in, you know, this spear. It's just kind of random out there, and it's kind of like an AI type spear. Sphere. Not a spear. But we'll start at the start of this episode.
Okay.
Because that's kind of the plot, is now they are kind of stuck in this sphere's gravitational well, so to speak. But the episode starts off where we see the Enterprise's number one.
Yeah, she beams aboard, didn't she? Or was that in the... That was in previous episode.
No, that was this episode. She beams aboard. She's in the all yellow, Caucasian female.
Right.
I think this pre intro credits. So, yeah, I don't think we ever get a name for her, but she beams aboard. She gives a status update of what's going on with the Enterprise, and it sounds like the holotech communication system fried all their other primary systems. Because Pike is like, I want that shit ripped out, and let's just use good old screen-to-screen communications.
Right. So, okay, I mean, I guess that solves one plot hole to where, you know, why they have holographic technology now when they didn't, you know, when Deep Space Nine was supposed to be the first time they got it, and it's because it sucked so bad and kept frying their systems that they just got rid of it and went old school.
Yeah, well, it might have been... Because it seems to be okay with the Discovery, so it might have been when the new, what is the Enterprise, a Constellation class starship?
Constitution class.
Yeah. class. So it might have been when those class of starships started coming out that that system just didn't work with their other system, so they kind of abandoned the technology.
Could be. We were talking about how... Enterprise was supposed to be the newest and most up-to-date ship at the time, and the older ships that they are using now look more like the old NX, older style designs. Mm-hmm. So maybe it could be the new change in technology is just incompatible. So I mean that could be an explanation. Yeah. I don't know if I'd like it as the explanation, but it could be one.
It could be, and it could work. It could have taken them another 100 years to figure it out and get it down to a T.
Yeah, it could be. Could be. Well, or they just forgot about it, and then somebody was like, oh, hey, I got an idea.
Yeah, it wasn't a pressing matter. It's not going to make or break the Federation, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Makes sense.
Let's see, what else happened in this episode?
Well, there's two storylines in this episode, because you have the bridge storyline with the sphere, and then you have the Tilly storyline, where...
With the spore.
Yeah, they're investigating what we saw at the end of episode 3 was that spore fungus that had attacked her. They now trapped it in the, I don't even know what, the mycelial chamber? Whatever Stamens used to go into so we could do is all jumping around.
I think we'll just stick with mycelial chamber.
Yeah, that'll work.
Yeah.
But it was, I was watching this episode and it was like, when the thing broke loose, it felt like I was watching a giant version of Flubber. I don't know if you remember that movie from the late 90s.
I do not. I know the movie, but I've never seen it.
I've seen it once when I was a wee laddie.
Hmm.
But yeah, it reminded me of a little, a bigger version and a darker version of Flubber.
Huh. Well, I don't know. I've never seen it, so... But I will admit, I did like the back and forth between the engineer and Stemmons. It'd be funny to hear how he does, you know, with Jackass Stemmons from the first season.
Wait, what's... You're referring to...
Stemmons, the... back. Remember when he was kind of an asshole before he got injected? Right, but imagine
who was the back and forth with?
With the engineer. The female one. I don't remember her name that they picked up.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, because she's that sarcastic, witty, and now he's kind of loosened up a bit. But imagine them two getting and trying to work together back when Stamets was just a huge dick.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of her name. I can't at the moment. It'll pop up.
Chief Engineer Loever? Loever? Is that how you say it?
No, that's the Enterprise Chief Engineer. I made a note because I was going to comment how... Pike said he doesn't think an engineer will ever love the Enterprise like Chief Louvier.
Oh,
the very beginning, once the first officer beams aboard.
Oh, I didn't notice. Oh, that's funny too, because that's Scotty. Poor Scotty.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring it up, because it was a Scotty reference. Yeah. Oh, Reno's the engineer. Yeah, I remember that scene, but it felt like a pissing contest and a preachy thing about renewable energy and the importance of using renewable energy versus...
Well, I mean, I didn't like that. That's kind of where Stemmons took it, but I kind of liked what the... her name was Reno, right?
Yeah.
I just kind of like her because she's kind of that jackassish but intelligent, sarcastic banter. It's like, you could, you know, keep throwing shade at me, but I don't really give a shit. I'm still going to do it anyways.
And yeah, she deflects it like the plague.
Yeah, I mean, it's not bad. Now, when Stemmons tries to make the argument about solar tech, that's when I kind of start like, oh, okay, no. Like, yeah, now you're just getting into pseudo-history that I don't know if is even going to be true.
Yeah, it was just one of those. It was like, okay, let's move along.
Yeah, because, I mean, one of the things about Star Trek is they never talked about, and I don't know if you ever noticed this, but they never talked about anything historically related that was in the time period that the episodes were made. So, like, if Star Trek, the first season was made in 87, they never made any historical reference towards 87 to 90. It was always several, you know, years down the line.
Yeah, and it was always mid-21st century.
Right. And this just seems more like, okay, we're trying to push what's going on today into the Star Trek. You know, getting into the – because, you know, big oil versus renewable
clean energy.
Yeah. I mean, climate change is the – you know, all the talk nowadays in the political sphere, but –
Yeah, the one thing is it was like Star Trek, at least watching Enterprise – Next Generation – they found a way to bring today's problems in a clever and either through alien species or just in a different way. So it is referencing what's going on today, but it's not, it's an indirect reference. It's like,
right.
You know, Earth used to have these problems or something like that. And it was just one of those kind of indirect methods when this was like a blatant slap to the face.
Oh, yeah.
Where Stemmons is like renewable clean energy is the way to go.
Oh, yeah, agreed, like 100%. And there was one episode of the original series that's always stuck out to me because it was the same – really, there's two. One, you could say the first ever interracial kiss on television with Kirk and, you know, Uhura. But the one that I always think about is – I don't remember the name of the episode, but they pick up an alien race to where half of their face is painted white and the other half is painted black.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy was a fugitive from, you know, a guy of the same species, but whose face was painted in the reverse direction.
And they went to war. So, like, the left side would be one color, the right side would be the other, and this guy had them switched.
Right. And they're feuding back and forth. They hate each other. They're more powerful than anybody on the ship, and the ship's just kind of caught in between. And they managed to go back to the planet and realize that their entire species was obliterated because their feud – ended up being their own destruction. And one of the things that stuck with me was like, well, why are you guys feuding? Well, it's because the color on the face isn't right. And it's like, wait,
yep. Big reference to civil rights.
Yeah, we didn't even know.
But in an indirect way, it's like, there, but it's like,
right. It's clearly
not a slap to the face.
Right. It's clearly talking about the civil rights movement during the 1960s. You know, what does it really matter? You're still the same race. You destroyed your own race because
species
faces.
Yeah, they could be. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah. It's the same. You destroyed your own species because your face is just a different color a little bit. Like, I mean, it was great, but this is just.
Well, this was a obvious preachy moment.
Right. Sorry.
Which we'll move on because. Obviously,
yeah. I mean, we tangented on a lot of it, but you know, it's just these subtle details, these differences of what the original Star Trek did and what they're doing now. That the little it's the little things that really that start adding up that cost Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, so. I agree. And overall, I mean, there was a lot of character building in this episode for Saru because you know he starts out with a cold. When they had the good old-fashioned team meeting in a conference room. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of develops, and Saru figures out that he's going through... I forgot what they called it. Was it, like, Valhir? The Kelpians changed to where Yeah, they believe it's like their death sequence. So now that that process has been triggered due to the presence of this fear.
Yeah, I mean,
there was a lot of good. You learned a lot about their race, and it really builds up for the sixth episode, which we'll talk about here at the later half of our show.
Oh yeah, but I actually really liked episode four. I don't know exactly how you felt, but this one felt. This one actually felt a little bit more Star Trek to me.
No, and
I know I went on that of... like. Well, there was a lot of like little things that I didn't like about it, but just kind of the unexpectedness of running into a new emergency, a new life, you know, coming up with a new, working together, coming up with a new way of solving the situation. And it was just, it felt more like an episode of Star Trek than this series long that we've been getting.
Yeah. And the problems I had with it was the scene we talked about with Stamets and Reno. And then, mm-hmm. It was just a very emotional, at least the characters were very emotional, but a lot of it felt a little dragged out. The dialogue just didn't feel right with me. I didn't care for this episode.
Oh, weird.
Now, it had a lot of potential because of the storyline with the sphere and what was going on with Tilly was somewhat interesting, but it didn't sit right with me. I watched it. I made a note of it. I was like, I'm not liking the over emotionalness and the somewhat lackluster writing that's going on. But hey, that's just me.
I guess this is kind of where we're going to differ, because usually we have a similar mindset on these episodes, but I actually didn't think it was that bad, or at least not to the point to where I didn't really notice the dialogue issues, and I get that it was over emotional, but Saru was dying and in an extraordinarily painful process, and him trying to fight through it and save the ship, and with Burnham. She was a Vulcan and she was raised by Vulcans and not to be emotional, but she's also gone through a lot of trauma and she's lost a lot of people that she loves in her life. She's lost both of her parents. She's lost Georgia, who was like a mother to her. She lost a lot of people on her ship who she considered family. Spock is on the run for murder and being hunted down for murder charges, and now she's losing Saru. And she's going to have to be the one to kill him. So, I can understand the emotional breakdown in that instance. That'd be something.
I can get it.
Riker
get it too,
couldn't
but
kill
even,
Worf when
even
Worf asked him
out
to
commit
suicide. So,
yeah, even stepping out of that, the Saru-Brenna moment, even when they're talking about this fear, and there's just a lot of emotion, really unnecessary emotion. I mean, I won't say unnecessary, but just maybe a little over the top emotion. Like when they find out that the sphere is trying to communicate with the ship, and that's part of the virus that's kind of shutting down a lot of their systems, because we see the universal translator is now malfunctioning and all this stuff starts malfunctioning. So towards the end of it, once they've realized the sphere is dying and it wants to upload its consciousness or all its data into the ship's computer, there was also a lot of emotions there where I really didn't feel like it needed to be super emotional.
You mean when
it was the bridge scene. So it was like Brenham was emotional, like she was about to lose Saru, but it was just a sphere that we were introduced to at the start of the episode.
Well, I mean, the sphere is a living being. You said AI at the beginning, but I don't think it was an artificial intelligence. I think it was an organic intelligence that has been roaming the universe that was about to die. And it's transferred all of its knowledge so it wouldn't be forgotten to the ship. In its last act, it protected it from being destroyed when it exploded. So its last dying act was to give all the knowledge that they had under the ship and save their lives. So, it might have been a little bit overdone, but...
Maybe I'm not just in touch with my feelings, and I really don't care for that over-emotional crap.
Yeah, maybe. That could be it. I don't
know. That's how it came off to me.
And you know what? I've had some similar feelings on other episodes, but I did not have that same feeling in this episode. I actually thought this one wasn't bad. Even when the crew on the bridge crew, when Burnham was carrying off Saru, as they know that he was about to be killed, standing up and honoring Saru, I mean, it was a nice moment. It almost reminded
was a nice
me of
touching moment, but
kind of reminded me of that Avengers Endgame scene that got that deleted scene where instead of doing the wedding to honor Tony, they all kneeled for, you know, at the battlefield to honor him. Well, there was a deleted scene where they could have, instead of going with the funeral, they would have gone with everybody kneeled to honor Tony at the battlefield as he died, all the Avengers, to honor. It just, that's what it reminded me of, just that sense of honor of we respect you and we're, well, you yeah. know, we're, that's, yeah, kind of tangenting a bit, but that's just what it reminded me of. I guess you never saw that deleted scene.
No.
Yeah.
You know, there was one thing that was funny in this scene. It's when Stimmich is trying to calm down Tilly and he tells her to start singing her favorite song and they start singing Space Oddity by David Bowie, which is from the 60s or the early 70s. And I found that somewhat interesting that they would pick a song that's 200-300 years old. I mean, I get the audience is going to know it, but if you think logically, I mean, how many of us are going to know Beethoven's Fifth Symphony and it be our favorite go-to musical composition?
I don't know about that. One of my favorite songs is Tartini's Violin Sonata in G minor, which is
okay. Thanks for ruining my point.
I know, but they, you know, when looking at Star Trek, you know, especially Next Generation, they have a lot of Beethoven and they have a lot of classical music. But when you get to Voyager, Tom Paris loves rock and roll. He plays rock and roll all the time. The Doctor is a huge opera fan. Sings a lot of 400, 500, 600 year opera songs. So, no, I mean, it's actually not beyond the realm of possibility.
I'm not saying beyond the realm. So, Stemmons, okay, it's Tilly's favorite song, so she's singing it, and then Stemmons picks it up and starts singing it. I mean, they seem like they have two opposite tastes. So how would both of them know the lyrics to this old-ass song?
Okay, I get what you're saying, that it's an old-ass song. What are the odds of both of them knowing it at the same time? Yeah, that I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. Actually, hang on, I take that back. Now that we think about it, remember, Stemmons and his now-dead boyfriend were used to talk about the old music that they would listen to that were hundreds of years old, so maybe it wouldn't be beyond that realm of possibility. Because they were talking about old compositions that they used to listen to that I don't even know of, but I know that they're old, so maybe.
I don't know, but this episode ends on an interesting note because Saru ends up surviving, obviously, and his little threat ganglia fallout, and Tilly gets swallowed up by a flubber cocoon.
Yeah, that was interesting. Man, was it this episode or was it 5 where the cocoon sprays mist on them that's basically like shrooms and they start tripping out because they get high as fuck off of the shrooms? Was that 4
that
or was that 5?
I think it was the end of this episode because
that's how it distracted him to get Tilly back in.
Yeah, and I think that's how it ended on 5. Or sorry.
Yeah, 4.
Started on 5? I don't remember.
No, I think you're right. I think that's how it ended for 4, and that's when they were looking inside the cocoon yelling for Tilly. And then 5, we see Brenham like doing that fake run down the hallway that we were talking about before the episode.
Episode 5, Saints of Imperfection, where, as we were talking about before we started recording, it starts off with Brenham running to Stemmons' lab. And I'm like, if it's that important, what's wrong with just the point-to-point transportation on the ship? Or ship-to-ship transportation, whatever it's called. Probably be a lot quicker. And then the run just looked entirely fake. Like, the Flash's run when he's going through whatever on his CW show.
I know, right? Well, it was funny. He even admitted on an interview that at first they would use like a treadmill, but after a while they just, you know, would do the top part of his face and would just wave his hands real fast to look like he was running. That's exactly what it looked like in this when Brenham was running.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why they keep having sequences that involve the characters running, because it never looks great. Like when in our last part and our last episode that we talked about Tilly having to run her half marathon or whatever, that didn't look right either.
Yeah, especially since she stopped for so long and managed to catch back up and surpass everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, there's...
But yeah,
I think it's just safe to
stop the running sequences because it just doesn't look good.
I think it's just safe to say that Discovery is just not a good show.
No, it's a flawed show. It's a mediocre show that has good parts.
Pretty much. I mean, it doesn't really have good directing. The acting's okay. Writing's not been very good. Writing's actually been bad. The consistency with the Star Trek universe and Star Trek storylines has been abysmal. So, I mean, it's just, honestly, it's just safe to say that just Discovery is just not a good show. Maybe our expectations are just too high for it, and that's why.
Maybe. Let's get into, we'll talk about more of episode 5, because 5 is the episode where Tilly gets sucked into the mycelial network, so they have to try to rescue her. Section 31 and Captain Georgiou is heavily involved. And this is the episode where Pike, he knows he's not given all the information on Georgiou and whatever's going on. And he starts to pick up on it. And he's like, Brenham, I know there's stuff going on. Especially when they're tracking down Spock's shuttle. And they're trying to, They're trying to call him. They're trying to get him on Helm. Yeah, they're trying to hail him.
Hail him. Yeah. They're tracking down the
shuttle.
But
he's not responding.
Right. I imagine they were pretty shocked when they got the shuttle on board and found air quotes, Captain Georgiou on board.
They all came out. There was like 6 of them or 8 of them where they were guns drawn because, you know, Spock's a fugitive. And then everyone sees Captain Georgiou. They all put their guns down except for Brenham, who leaves there another 2 or 3 seconds.
Yeah. Oh, she
and Pike, it grabs Pike's attention. He's like, Brenham, lower your motherfucking weapon.
And then that hallway conversation, that it was interesting. I didn't know that. Well, I guess why would I know? But they make the connection that Pike and Georgiou knew each other at the academy, where Georgiou is apparently a badass where she can get drunk off of her ass and still come out top of her class, ace and test, you know, the next day. Yeah. Fuck, I wish I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, and it's one of those where, you know, just in talking with Georgiou, and we see another conversation that happens later between Pike and Brenham. He's like, this doesn't seem like the same Georgiou I knew at the academy. And then Brenham tries to play it off as, well, the war changes people. And he's like, no, I'm calling bullshit. He's like, there's something going on. And if you know something, you need to tell me. Because he was also referencing...
which she never did.
Ash Tyler. Well, I think she does coming up. Yeah, sometime during the rest of the season.
Yeah, I don't think she kind of... I don't think she totally needs to, because this is skipping ahead a little bit, because he eventually finds Section 31 ship, goes on, meets one of his old friends, and then meets the admiral from season 1. I can't remember her name.
Cornwallis.
Yeah, the one that banged Malfoy's dad.
Lorca. God, you're terrible with names.
I really am. If you guys haven't figured that out by now, then...
40 plus episodes and you can't get it together.
No. No, maybe in another 40 episodes. But
show's got to go that long first.
Yeah. So, you know, where was I going with this? I think he's starting to get, as he gets more information, I just don't think he is trying to press Brenham as much, because he thinks he's starting to get the full picture when he really hasn't, you know, not knowing that Georgiou's from another universe and, you know, all the rest of the details.
Yeah, and Brenham pretty much says is like, this is not the time or the place for the conversation. The conversation is way too long for just a quick, you know, conversation in the hallway before she goes and sees Ash Tyler again.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, just be sure you don't lie to me and be sure we have that conversation.
Well, okay, here's I know I've already gone on a shit ton of tangents today.
Yeah.
But I'm going on another one, because this shit's really pissing me off. All right, so with the Georgiou and Pike scene, when they get in the elevator, she reveals that she's a part of her badge, as she's a part of Section 31. Everybody is so casual, like, oh, Section 31, they're Starfleet's intelligence agency. No. Bad. Bad fucking Star Trek. Because this is, I'm like, no. Section 31 is not a part of Starfleet intelligence. these people should not even know Section 31 exists. Section 31 is supposed to be an off-books intelligence gathering organization, like CIA, like rogue CIA operations level shit that we shouldn't even know even exists. So the fact that these people, the fact that Burnham, the captain, and they're so casual about them going about Section 31 is completely ruining Section 31 that was set up through Discovery and Enterprise. Because, or not Discovery, Deep Space Nine. Because, you know, even with Deep Space Nine, you weren't even sure if Section 31 was an actual organization. Because there was, we were introduced by it by a man named Director Sloan, who was supposed to be a member of Starfleet Intelligence, but he actually kidnapped Dr. Bashir and was a part of Section 31 to see if he was an adequate recruit for the organization, given him being genetically altered. But you never knew for sure if Section 31 was an actual organization, because how they played it off was nobody would even – they mentioned it to the admirals at Starfleet Intelligence. They said, we'll look into it, and they never did again. You know, when they go to a mission where they have to try and they're going to a diplomatic mission on Romulus, you know, they capture him, and then they say that – he was just a rogue member of Starfleet Intelligence. There was no Section 31. He was just trying to – he was pissed that his mentor was killed by one of our intelligence agents, and he was just trying to get back. You know, there was always an era of uncertainty, whether, oh, shit, is it real? Is it not real? And then you kind of still get that same feeling in Enterprise with the armory officer who was formerly a member of Section 31, because Section 31 predates the Federation. By the way, if you didn't know that, now you do. So long tangent to get to this point. Discovery is fucking up Section 31 and is really pissing me off, because Section 31 was a great storyline, a phenomenal storyline that they did in Deep Space Nine and continued in Enterprise, and they're killing it right now. Now, at least the movies, the remake that they did, the second one with Khan, Into Darkness, I think it was. Mm-hmm. They brought up Section 31, but that was the head of Starfleet and they were, you know, tight nipped. They did not let the information get out to any of the captains who were there that was actually a Section 31 base that was blown up, not just a library. So even then, they understood this. And I really just don't think that these writers understand. And I don't even think they've watched Star Trek, to be 100% honest with you. Like, okay, tangent's over. Sorry. But yeah. I had to get – that just really fucking pisses me off. Okay.
Okay.
What else we got?
Well, what has happened on this episode? I'm trying to remember this episode. And, it's only been like a day since I've watched it. But, boy, it apparently was a semi-forgettable episode.
Yeah. Well – I I'd have an excuse to forget it. But what's yours?
Well, it's like, I didn't care for these three episodes. I think six was the best better episode out of all three of them. But I didn't give it two shits for these episodes. And it didn't really keep my interest when watching it. The storyline with Tilly and the Mycelial Network, where the main character is afraid of some monster, which ends up being the consciousness of Hugh, who is trying to, you know, the network is trying to eat Hugh's consciousness, but Hugh is kind of...
he's protecting himself with the
protective
bark.
Yeah, protective bark from some tree that's poisonous to the mycelial network. So they see him as a monster when he sees them as a monster. And I was like, that's somewhat interesting. But then, you know, the Discovery is like, they do a half jump where half the ship's in the mycelial network and half the ship's in regular space. And then Brenham and Stamets tried to go rescue Tilly. And then it ends up Hugh's alive. And then, you know, oh, hey, that cocoon that was in the ship, hey, you could use that to bring Hugh back to life. Now, I didn't like when they killed Hugh in season one. I thought he was a good character and I liked the actor. I mean, I think they screwed up in season one and this felt like, oh, we can bring him back. We messed up. Let's fix it. And they fixed it, but I didn't like how they fixed it. And it probably might have been better off if he just stayed dead and they accepted the mistake. But that's just my two cents and my thoughts on it.
Yeah. I don't know. With Discovery, it feels like every plot hole that they try to plug creates two new holes.
Yeah.
So, and then it wasn't bad with the Doctor, and the way that they explained it kind of makes sense. Because he was Simmons was going back and forth between the, you know, mycelial network and reality. He was kind of, his mind was getting warped between the two, and he would have instances where he could come out of it, and the only times he could was around the Doctor. And then supposedly he cried when he died and he kissed him, and when he went back, his essence or energy was taken into the network with him. So I mean, it's like, it makes sense. It's just, it's a bit of a stretch.
But then again, they made a decision to kill him in season one, which I did not agree with. But I think it was one of those they needed to live with it. I know he was a well-liked character, but
they could have been planning to do that from the beginning. I mean, they did, you know, he did talk to him while he was in the network. So he was.
I don't think so. I felt like it was more of a, hey, we wrote this episode till he's stuck in the network. Now we kind of just, we could throw some little things in here and bring him back to life. Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's do that. I'm sure that's how the conversation went in the writer's room. You know, because they could have easily just gone and got Tilly and pulled her out, and they were out of the mycelial network, have no need for the Section 31 ship to kind of hold them in place or anything like that. It just felt like, hey, we could stitcher this or suture this wound a little bit, and they'll forget about it, and we'll bring back this well-liked character.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me.
I mentioned I think that's kind of how it was.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me.
But we see some futuristic tech, at least Deep Space Nine and Next Generation era, with the communications badge being present in the Section 31.
Right, that makes sense. Yeah. You know, that they would have more advanced technology. Centuries
and
advanced.
The cloaking holographic, but the ship disguised as an asteroid just tailing to Discovery. So we did see some cool tech, and it's funny with the communications badge that Tyler has, and Pike's like, what the hell is that? I don't know if you've ever seen the Kingsman movies.
I have, actually.
Okay, so it reminded me of when the newbie's getting the tour of like all these gadgets, and he looks over at the tablets and he's like, what are those over there? And the head guy is like, well, that's irrelevant now. The real world technology has caught up with that spy tech. So it's useless iPads.
No, I don't remember that part. I thought you were going to talk about the lighter. It was like, let me guess, that's a communications device. No, it's a hand grenade.
No, it's more of like the spy craft developed this technology, so essentially tablets were around in the 80s,
right,
or the 90s, and then eventually the real world caught up and developed with the spy craft. It's just a way of, the secret government agencies have this, top-notch shit that isn't available to us normies.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's because it has the technology just hasn't gotten into the private market yet. Or the private sector, I should say. So, I mean, it's not totally surprising.
No, it was just one of those. I saw that scene, and that's what it reminded me of. That was the first thing that popped in my head.
Nice. Actually, I did have that similar thought with the Kingsman, but I thought about the grenade scene, the hand grenade.
So, but this episode ends, they end up saving Tilly. They bring Hugh back to life. The ship's pulled out of the mycelial network. But it ends on an interesting note because you see Admiral Cornwallis talking to Leland, who's the commander or the captain of the Section 31 ship, and talking to Pike. And she says, hey, whatever these signals are leaving a trace amount of tachyon particles, which,
right.
A lot of people speculate that that has to do with time travel. And then, Pike's like, well, it could also have something to do with warp signatures and transporter technology and all this fun stuff. So
cloaking technology as well.
Yeah.
That's what the Klingons use for their cloaking tech.
So it's one of those, you're looking at possible time travel, but, on the other side, it could be practical tech that we're familiar with causing these problems. But of course, they're only going to bring that up if it's the non-practical solution.
Right. Yeah. So, well,
hint, hint.
Yeah, it's
big, big clue right there that someone's time traveling.
Mm-hmm.
Because it makes it's not good TV if it's just, hey, someone's transporting in and lighting these signals and transporting out. That's no fun. We're gonna make it a time travel thing.
Yeah, right. Well, I don't know. Let's see. Here, I pulled up the definition of tachyons for if anybody wants to know what a tachyon is. Tachyon particle, because it's not just made up and made up shit in Star Trek.
It's a real
particle. It's a real thing. So tachyon particles is a hypothetical particle that always travels faster than light. Most physicists believe that faster than light particles cannot exist because they are not constant with the known laws of physics. It's a composition, elementary particle, status, hypothetical, mass, imaginary. So supposedly it can, these particles can travel faster than the speed of light.
Yeah, it's a theoretical particle in modern physics that has not been proved yet.
I'm curious if it was a theoretical, I'm curious which came first, if Star Trek came up with the tachyon first or if physics did. Because that's kind of the same with warp technology. Star Trek came up with it, the idea first, but then physics kind of caught up with them and said, oh, shit, this isn't just science fiction. This can actually happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I don't know.
Maybe something to look into.
Yeah, look into that. I'm thinking it might have came first in this situation. But let's talk about episode 6, The Sound of Thunder, which, in my opinion, is the better of the three episodes we are talking about today. It was so good that, I won't say so good, but it was intriguing enough to where I actually stopped taking notes and I had to, like, refresh my memory a little bit and add notes in before we even started recording.
This one was a more exciting episode. You get to see Saru go back to his home planet.
A lot of character development for Saru. A lot of world building for his species and
what he's gone through. It was really good development too. Like
you get a good backstory too.
Oh yeah. Well, you find out that so the spear had encountered the planet and kept. I don't remember exactly what they said, but they basically kind of kept track of what was going on the planet. And apparently, 2,000 years ago, Saru species were the predators. Mm-hmm. Where the do you remember the name of the
Ba'u?
The Ba'u were the prey. And mm-hmm. the Saru species nearly wiped out the Ba'u. And at some point, the Ba'u managed to overcome and nearly wipe out Saru species. Do we know what his species is called?
Saru's?
Yeah. Do you know? Kelpian. Yes. Kelpian. That's right.
They only say it every episode.
Yeah, I know. But I can't. You know how I get with names. I'm glad I just remembered it to begin with. Yeah, and it turns out that the Ba'u have been suppressing the information about Kelpian
menopause.
Yeah, because
and the Kelpian change. It's essentially Kelpian what it puberty? Is. I mean,
would it be menopause or puberty? Because isn't menopause like the ending of like that, where puberty would be the beginning?
I don't know. He was sick and. You know, he had like a really bad cold, and I know through menopause you go through like hot flashes and all these changes. So I considered it more of menopause than puberty.
I don't know.
Because they probably have their own version of puberty at the start of life to develop into an adult, and then they got this later stage of adulthood, which is like species-wide menopause.
Yeah. I guess it just depends. We don't know how old their species can – or how long their species can live for. So
yeah. We knew Saru is he's been away from the planet for 18 years because he got rescued. He stole some Ba'u technology, sent a signal out, got the attention of a then Lieutenant Giorgio, who rescued him. The Federation granted asylum. He joined Starfleet. 18 years later, he goes back to his planet. So we know he's been away for 18 years. Mm-hmm. Now, how old was he at the time?
He didn't could have look been like 18, age much. Yeah.
Could have been 46, could have been 129, we don't know.
Yeah, we really don't.
It's still TBD because we don't know his lifespan.
Yeah, well, I don't think they know their lifespan because they would kill themselves after they would start going through the
Bahar. True, but they have an idea of when I didn't write it down in its but I think it's the Valhalla or
Valhalla, something like that.
Whenever they go through their menopause, they have always thought it was the, you know, the Baal would get them and kind of execute them. So they kind of have an idea of from birth to around what age. So, like, you know, menopause kicks in around 45, 50 years old for human women. So we know, you know, we know that time frame, but how far can they live after that until their end? And that's unknown.
See, but here's one of the things that kind of confused me. I thought that in the beginning, he said that his species was one that were raised and farmed for slaughter to be eaten. Like they would eat them because they, the ganglia, the fear sensors that fell apart were what made them taste so good. But it didn't really look like the Baal ever actually ate them. It didn't really look like they had much interest in it. It didn't look like, so could the fact of the farming to be slaughtered just be an excuse or just kind of like another story
told? That were, yeah, it could have been stories told just to
like with the great balance fear. That they, yeah, like they've been telling them that that they taste so good and that they eat them, kind of like with the Yondu and Quill with the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
You know, threatening to eat them just so they comply.
Yeah, could have been. That very well a possibility. Now, when they were going through Saru's medical scans, I mean, he's kind of a scrawny, I mean, their species is relatively scrawny, so if they did eat him, I don't know, it wouldn't yield much. Not like, say, a cow who's kind of big and beefy.
Yeah, but we overfatten pun intended. Our animals, yeah.
True, I mean, especially the ones that are going to be raised for slaughter, but they're still a heavier animal.
That's true.
I mean, even if you're just raising them for...
Could be the delicacy, because, I mean, they did say that the ganglia, the fear receptors, is what made them taste good.
Yeah, it could be.
It could just be like a delicacy.
Probably whenever those ganglia come out, they get a shot of endorphins or adrenaline or whatever, which makes them taste better, so to speak.
Well, I mean, I assume that the ganglia were something that produced hormones in it, because that's what, like a form of gland.
That's what I was thinking, adrenaline or endorphins or something that makes it taste better.
And for a lot of species, certain glands are actually delicacies. So, yeah, I mean, it would make sense, especially since Giorgio in the Terran universe gave Brenham the ganglia.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember that part, but I think she said it was even a delicacy then, because she was like, here, I'll even give you my ganglia. As almost like she was giving it up. So,
yeah, it might be like give it up.
I don't know. But it's just weird that they would talk about that so much in the first season about them being, you know, raised, farmed, and eaten. And
it's probably just a ploy that the Baal instill.
Yeah. And then they hardly talk about it in this episode.
Yeah, we did mention why they went to this planet, because a signal appeared in front of Kamenir. I almost called it Cashier or Kashmir, but it's a Kamenir. But yeah, the signal brought them there. The signal was, of course, gone by the time they came back or managed to warp there or whatever they did. And that's what brought them to the planet in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Which ends up saving their ass, because the Baal, you know, they find out that Saru and Brenham go down to the planet. They talk to Saru's sister. Bruce, the Baal is not happy about it, so they contact Starfleet and they're like, we want our Kelpian back. Pike's like, hell no. And then Saru surrenders himself and is taken prisoner.
And then he goes full Captain America? Yeah, chained up to the wall, breaking off, and then he just starts going rampaging once they start trying to hurt his sister. Because his sister knows about the ganglia, and because of that, they brought her on board and wanted to suppress the information from ever getting out. Mm-hmm. But Saru goes all badass and just starts destroying everything. And
yeah, well, we find out that after the change, the Valhir or whatever we're calling it, the Kelpian menopause, that Kelpians kind of develop a temper, And that's part of why the Ba'ul were on the brink of extinction. The Kelpians have a temper once they go through this change and are instilled with rage, and, you know, they have Captain America-like strength. So that's why they were killed before they went through the change. And now Saru's going to have to learn to control that emotion.
Well, we should go into detail on this part, because this was important, that, one, the Ba'ul look just like the Mentors. I don't know if you noticed that.
The Mandors?
The Mentors.
Oh, you know what
the,
he...
The
I was thinking
things from Harry Potter.
The way he came out of, like, oil, I was thinking it was the what killed Tasha Yar in Next Generation.
Yeah, I had that... I remember the first time watching this, when we watched it live, I had that same feeling too. But that was supposed to be the evil that was cast off by a form of God that was left on that planet.
You know what my theory is?
Hmm.
I think Scooby and the gang found the tar monster and banished it to space, and then this is what the result is.
Oh my gosh.
I think this is the tar monster from Scooby-Doo.
That's funny.
And then, you know, then they had to live with the Kelpians, so that's a good theory. It's a good crossover. I think it'll work.
That's an interesting one. That's a fun
That's
one.
My theory. I have really high hopes that they'll pay off that theory.
I don't think it will, but okay. Good for you.
Okay, obviously Chris cannot read sarcasm.
I get the sarcasm, but good luck with that. Okay. No, the point that I was getting to was they figured out how to replicate what the sphere did in the last episode, which activated the last one, four,
triggered the menopause,
which triggered the menopause, and they tried to do it planet wide, and the Ba'ul threatened to essentially exterminate the entire Kelpian race, and they were going to until the Red Angel came in and saved Saru,
saved
the day by destroying all of their. What was it called? The Watchful
Eye? They were like little, pillars that they had in each village that was like a Big Brother and would watch, or Skynet might be another good reference.
They had, they called it something like the Watchful Eye or some shit like that. But that they had the power to destroy, you know, those entire villages, and they had thousands of them across the planet. And I almost said Enterprise. Discovery. Is not capable of destroying them all in time. So the Red Angel steps in, pops out of nowhere, saves Saru. And Saru, when he gets back to the ship, we find out that it wasn't a machine. It was an actual person inside of a suit.
Saru has this vision where he can see like spectrums and things that humans can't see because he has much better vision than humanoids or other humanoids. So he is able to see that it is a humanoid in an Iron Man suit that is the Red Angel we are seeing.
I love how we just use a shit ton of other references to describe everything.
I know. I think their exact words were a humanoid in advanced mech suits. And I was like, no. It's a space Iron Man.
That's just Iron Man. Because he can go into space with them, can he?
Kind of. But yeah, it's just it's a Star Trek Iron Man.
Yeah. So now the question, or woman. I think they did acknowledge that it was futuristic tech, so it was nothing that they had. So
yes.
The time travel theory is looking more and more likely.
Mm-hmm.
So the question now becomes, who is in the suit and why do they keep going to these locations?
You know what's funny? I mean, I would say this season was the better of the two seasons. And
I would agree.
I don't remember who's in the suit.
I do.
I know I have an idea of who I think I remember is in the suit, but I don't remember who's entirely in the suit.
I do, because I did not like it. I mean, I liked it. It was.
Go into too details, but I was like, I've seen it. I've only seen it once, and it was like 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember. There's a lot of things. I remember how the finale ends, because we know it ends with them jumping into the future, because that's where season 3 takes place.
Right.
I don't remember much about the Red Angel. I don't even remember when we see Spock. I imagine it's going to be the next three episodes, but I don't remember.
I think it is. I mean, we kind of have to. We're halfway through the season. There's only 12 episodes this season, right?
14, so.
Oh, okay, so we're almost halfway
through. Almost to the halfway point. We will cross the halfway point next time.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be the next episode that we'll see Spock.
Yeah.
But so, I don't know. I actually don't remember. Oh, sorry. Well, I was going to say, I don't actually remember how it ended. I remember they went in the future, but I don't remember the finale, so.
Yeah, like, I don't remember much about it.
This was kind of a forgettable season, to be 100% honest.
Yeah, it had its highlights. What do you think of, before we go back and talk about what we did, what did you think of these three episodes?
I know I talked a lot of shit about it, but they actually weren't bad. Like, I went on several long tangents about that just pissed me off. It's just ruining a great storyline. It's very frustrating. You know, I'm trying to think of a good example, something Star Wars related, but I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but that just really pisses me off. All right. But other than that, they weren't bad. I think these three episodes were actually better than the first three episodes of season two. I think these were the best three episodes so far of Discovery, if I'm just going to be cut and dry.
I disagree. I think six was good. I liked six, and that's probably been closer to the highlight of the season so far. But I think the first three episodes had some better content than especially four and five. I didn't care for, like, four had so much potential with that sphere storyline, and I some things just pulled me out of the episode. And like you said, with Section 31 in episode five, there was just some things where it, like we mentioned, Discovery has been a mediocre show that has had really nice highlights here and there.
Right. Yeah, so. I mean, I don't know, because remember I had the difference of opinion with you on episode four. I actually thought episode five was the worst of these three. I definitely think that six was the best. So I'd probably go, you know, six the best, four the second, then, you know, five the worst. But it wasn't too bad. I think overall I would give these three probably a 6.5. Five's kind of, you know, dragging down the average. I think episode six would probably be a 7.5, 8. I think it was one of their better, if not the best one so far.
Yeah. So. I really liked how they developed Saru and his species in six. Was it perfect?
I do too.
No. But it was darn good.
Yeah. What about you? What are your thoughts?
I think I've expressed them. I like six. The other two are pretty much forgettable with a few exceptions. I think the sphere storyline, I think it had a lot of potential and it fell flat a little bit, but I think six would bring up my score to probably like a 7. But six itself is probably like an 8.
So just not too so sense. Better. It's getting better slowly but surely. It's a slow improvement, but it's an improvement.
It's more of a, none of these episodes are like great, fantastic. It's more of how much is the good moments going to make you forget about the not so good moments?
Yeah, right.
So we'll see.
Well, see, at least we can't, at least we could say that we're not just total, you know, we'll talk great about any show that ever comes on, because we talk nothing but praise when it comes to shows like The Mandalorian and
even Mandalorian we have some gripes on, but
yeah, but we have some, but we Mandalorian's more praise than it is gripes, where here it's significantly more gripes than praise.
True
So and then so. what was our Altered Carbon, we talked a lot of good stuff about Altered Carbon, even though at first it was up and down, but I think Discovery by far has been, you know, our toughest criticism so far and probably the worst show so far. We're, you know, and that's kind of my question is, how does, based on where we're at so far, how is Discovery doing against the other shows that we've watched? So Picard, Altered Carbon, and The Mandalorian.
I don't know. probably towards the bottom, because I like Ultra Carbon and I like Mandalorian. And Picard, those two are definitely above Picard and Discovery.
Okay. I would probably have to... Wait, hang on. Say that one more time. Did you have Discovery above Picard or below Picard?
They're on the same tier.
You think so? You think Discovery's... I don't know. I think Picard would actually be a little bit better.
Either way, neither one were... They're on that not impressive tier.
That's fair. I can't disagree there.
So, that's kind of how... I was going more off a tier instead of a 1-4 ranking.
Yeah, that's probably a better or a more apt description. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's about it we got for this episode.
Shall we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat him.
Punch it,
punch it.
Punch it!
Punch it!
Punch it, hot light! Punch it, let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
What do we have in store for next week?
So next time, we are going to talk about more Discovery Part 8, Season 2, Episodes 7, 8, and 9, entitled Light and Shadows, If Memory Serves, and Project Daedalus. Hey, I could pronounce all those words, and I know what they all mean.
Well, my memory won't serve me well for Episode 8, so we know that.
I'm looking at the little thumbnails that they have on CBS All Access. I have no idea what's going to happen in any of them.
Yeah,
so it'll be interesting. We'll have to watch it, and we'll talk about it more next time on Deep Space High.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess that'll do it then. Thank you guys so much for tuning into this episode of Deep Space High, and be sure to join us next time as we continue our discussion on Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, don't forget to keep the conversation going with hashtag Deep Space High, hashtag Tacos and Trek. Also, be sure to follow our Facebook page, Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV Reviews, and our Instagram at Deep Space High Podcast. If you follow us on those platforms, you can stay up to date with our latest announcements and shenanigans.
And we also want to ask everyone to please leave a review and a 5-star rating on Apple Podcast. It really helps out the show. It's a huge benefit to us, and it gives us the opportunity to listen to feedback and get you guys better content so you can enjoy our wonderful shit show that much better. Mm-hmm. All right, well, I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
And I'm Jedi Master Steve. I know I didn't say it at the start of the show, but I am him.
And live long and prosper.